I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a daily look at how North Carolina is dealing with COVID-19 and what we're learning about ourselves in the face of a global crisis. Today, paying for the pandemic. It's been another busy day in Raleigh as state lawmakers try to shape and support North Carolina's recovery from COVID-19, specifically how much money they will have and where to spend it.
Everybody else is going to have to tighten their belts, and we're going to have to as well. But here's the dilemma with government. As people lose jobs, as problems happen, as there's less money out there, the need for government services rises. So it's a really tough curve, you know, how that affects it.
Republican State House Speaker Tim Moore and his fellow legislators have their work cut out for them. They're getting billions of dollars in federal aid to work with and will need to figure out how to supplement that with state funding. At the top of the Democratic agenda, Medicaid expansion. State Representative James Galliard made the case that the time for it is now.
We can no longer run from this issue. I think the pandemic is forcing us to say we have a responsibility to make sure everyone around us has proper access to health care, because by keeping one person healthy, we're really keeping everybody healthy.
And there's some evidence that Medicaid expansion might have bipartisan support, at least during the pandemic. So let's start there with WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief, Jeff Tiberi. He spoke with producer Will Michaels about the competing budget proposals and what differences might need to be reconciled before the state can get financial relief.
What lawmakers are doing this week and maybe next week, depending on whether or not they can reach a compromise soon, is they have a pot of money. It's federal money. It comes from the CARES Act, which listeners will remember was passed. That's the big $2 trillion relief bill that Congress passed due to the coronavirus pandemic. And North Carolina initially received $6 billion from the federal government for state purposes. Now, $2.5 billion of that has already gone to various places. So lawmakers have not actually appropriated any of the money themselves yet. What they're left with is $3.5 billion in federal funding. And the House wants to appropriate about $1.7 billion of that now, whereas the North Carolina Senate wants to appropriate about $500 million less, about $1.23 billion. So there's a significant difference in how much they want to appropriate versus save for later weeks and months ahead as of this moment.
Okay. So what accounts for that difference right now?
Well, I think some of it is philosophical. The Senate, as we've seen in recent budget cycles, is a little bit more fiscally conservative, likes to save more, certainly uses the word prudent more frequently in its approach to spending. Also worth noting, Republicans, as a reminder, have control over both chambers. In the Senate, there are 29 Republicans, and in the House, there are 65 Republicans. So, you know, you put 65 people in a room, there are going to be more wants and needs most often than there are with 29. So some of it is philosophical. Some of it also pertains to various differences within the proposals from each chamber. Now, an obvious one, or a very notable one, is that the House, and they've talked about this in some remote committee meetings that they've been doing for weeks now, they want to provide funding so that individuals across the state who are living in a healthcare coverage gap are able to get COVID-19 tests and COVID-19 treatment if they test positive. So this effectively is Medicaid expansion, which, of course, North Carolina is one of the handful of states that did not expand Medicaid. Now, it's important to note that this would only be a temporary expansion, but the Senate is not going along with this, partially because they've always been opposed to Medicaid expansion, at least the Republicans in the North Carolina Senate, and partially because they maintain that federal dollars will provide for this and the state doesn't need to do it.
Right. I was going to say, it sounds a little bit like an interesting political point here, because Democrats have been pushing for Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act just about since it passed 10 years ago, right? And they today called again for Medicaid expansion, kind of using the public health crisis as an opportunity to push again for it, right?
That is absolutely correct. And we've heard this as a rallying cry, as a policy cry from advocates, from rural hospitals, from the Democratic governor. and also, important to lay out there, from some Republicans, many more in the North Carolina House than there have been in the Senate. The Senate has really served as the continuous roadblock to Medicaid expansion.
Medicaid aside, and understanding that there are some funding differences between the House and the Senate's proposals at the moment, does it seem like perhaps more than usual that there is a sense that they will come to some agreement fairly soon? I mean, I'm just thinking about the animosity that historically, not just the parties, but the chambers between them have had.
So I think the answer to that question is yes. My level of optimism is relatively high for the legislature. And I would point to a couple of things. One is the fact that you had 45 primary sponsors on the Senate proposal for COVID relief on Tuesday. 45 out of 50 senators. So all but five Democratic senators signed on to this bill. So that is, that any reasonable person can agree, that is wide bipartisan support. The other thing I would, that I think about frequently in covering politics, is the notion of optics. And what are the optics at play here? If they come back in and they, as they're working through this $500 million difference, which is a big number, at the same time, I think that you can go to the negotiating table and in an afternoon, you probably can hash out those differences and maybe less if people are ready and willing to negotiate. If they don't come to an agreement quickly, there aren't a lot of shows in town going on right now. I think that they would get a lot of attention for their inability to move this forward. And reminder, it's Republicans who control both chambers. It's not as though there's a split legislature. So I think that the potential threat of bad optics is going to also help them to achieve an agreement here and probably soon. And one other thing to drop in here, potentially, is that just as we've seen Congress pass multiple bills, this is not the only bill that the legislature is going to pass related to COVID relief. It's just the first one.
It strikes me that this is a really odd time at the legislature. I haven't been there. Obviously, you've been there for the last few days. But what's it like there right now?
It's in many, most ways, the strangest experience I've had in that building. And I've had plenty of strange experiences as you think about late night budget surprises and sessions and policy, wait, where did that come from moments and arrests and protests and all sorts of things. This is strange. The building is effectively closed to the public. So no lobbyists, no advocates, no school groups in single file lines kind of snaking through the hallways at the legislature. There were journalists there on Tuesday, many of the usual Capitol Press Corps members, but also some journalists from out of town. For the most part, every journalist, with the exception of one, was wearing a mask throughout the day. A lot of lawmakers are wearing masks, but not all of them. And it was weird, right? Like, I'm walking down Lane Street to enter the basement underneath the legislature. That's how I typically go into the building. And I stop. There's a tent set up, and a General Assembly police officer scans my forehead to make sure that I'm beneath that 100.4 temperature threshold. And they take a little pink sticker, and they put it on my badge to denote that I've checked in for the day, and they have tested my temperature. So Tuesday was just a weird day. It was really quiet inside. And outside, mid to late morning, you look out these big floor-to-ceiling windows, and there are hundreds of people outside. And I did go outside for a period of time and kept, for the most part, I kept 6 feet as best I could. But there was a protest. There were several hundred people. This is the Reopen NC crowd.
Right.
And there are kids that are out there, everybody shoulder to shoulder. Very few people are wearing masks. There was actually a state lawmaker who was dressed up in, I would describe it as patriotic garb. I'm not entirely clear if he was going for Thomas Jefferson or some other revolutionary war hero, but it was an odd and different scene for sure.
Jeff Tiberi is WUNC's Capitol Bureau Chief. He spoke with producer Will Michaels. Hang tight, more in a moment. WUNC has made the decision to cancel our spring fun drive in order to provide all the important news and information that our listeners need right now, without any interruptions. But listener support is still vital to the future of WUNC, and we'll give our station the resources we need to continue to bring you the coverage you depend on. If you're able to support WUNC now, please give what you can. Every dollar truly makes a difference. You can give online at WUNC.org, and thank you. In-person attendance enhances most sporting events, even for those watching on TV. Think Cameron Crazies or the Caniacs. In NASCAR, fans in the stands are less integral to the overall experience. For one, the best seats at a track are furthest from the asphalt, the better to see all the cars and stay out of the smoke and debris. And during broadcasts, race fans can barely be heard over the roar of engines, until a winner crosses the finish line and does donuts in front of the grandstand. That fan-distant scenario is now a benefit, as NASCAR looks to hold races without people in attendance. The most high-profile race will be the Coca-Cola 600 in Charlotte on Memorial Day weekend. Governor Roy Cooper says his administration has reviewed the safety plans and approved them.
We believe that unless health conditions go down, that we can have the Coca-Cola 600 on Memorial Day weekend in Charlotte. I think that, or in Concord is where it would be, I think that NASCAR will be making that announcement, but we believe that's what will happen.
Cooper had already deemed NASCAR shops and team headquarters centered around the Charlotte area as, quote, essential businesses. And NASCAR's roots and many of its most ardent fans are also in the South. It's also true that the majority of governors in our region are opening their states up earlier than the rest of the country. That creates a perfect storm for NASCAR to become the first live sport to resume at least some semblance of its previous activities. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Will Michaels is our producer, Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer, and Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.